You're listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Now plug yourself in the ass. It's the time for another Go Plug Yourself podcast.
Pretty long history of cussing and stuff on the podcast.
Perfect.
That's we decided early on that we were absolutely going to swear a bunch. Walter.
Hey.
We're rolling.
We're back.
Yeah. This is episode 2 of the Go Friend Yourself.
Did you put these out individually?
Yeah. Chop them up.
Really?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. I'll chop little 15-minute episodes, but they all show up on the list, so then
really?
You can, like, pick and choose, and it's a lot of fun for the listeners.
Because we're absolutely recording them all together in one big lump.
Yeah, but not always. We might record more tomorrow.
Maybe. I don't know.
With the other Fringe correspondent, Sarah.
We'll see, yeah.
At least you don't have to deal with Sarah, because Sarah... Well, I'll ask a Sarah
don't
question.
Have to deal, who's this, like, living girlfriend? You don't have to deal with my better half.
Sarah's best questions whenever we do these is just sort of like, I don't like to go to theater. Why would I come to your show?
That's good, though.
And it's great because people are like, this is a Fringe podcast.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're just like, why would I come to your thing?
What's good is then people have really forced to sell it.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's the thing. Is it's like, and there's plenty of people out there who do think that way. But it's like that thing when people come up and they give you that kind of backhanded compliment where they come up and go, well, I hate comedy, but I loved what you did. And it's like, well, actually, you're not the kind of person I want to appeal to. So that's a fucking insult.
So James here, just before we go any further.
Want to say James Mollinger?
James Mollinger. Right.
Hi.
Now we have James Mollinger. Hello, James.
Hi.
I understand from this flyer you're living the dream.
Your show is called Living the Dream.
My show and my t-shirt. I'm wearing a t-shirt.
You got a Living the Dream t-shirt?
Living the Dream
Very
t-shirt.
Nice.
Like, I say it, I wear it, I walk it, I live it.
And your venue is Mainline Theater.
Walker.
Is here, right here where we're recording. Mainline Theater.
We're here at the Mainline
Big
thing.
Space, I assume?
Exactly, yeah.
Very good.
I like to point out that recording this podcast is now part of the dream.
Boom.
Because if you're living the dream and you're recording this podcast,
ipso facto,
this is the dream. Speaking to guys like you, who do what you do, is my dream. This is, you know, we've all had office jobs in the past. We've all done shitty jobs. And like,
I have an office job right now.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I had one up until very recently, and you know, the dream is doing shit like this. This is what we love, right?
Yeah.
And now, so here's what I want to get to now. So you're claiming, or in your memory, we've met before this.
Mm.
And I feel like we have. So talking
like
to you
have.
Now, I think that's a distinct possibility. You were around last summer, yeah?
I was around last summer. See, here's the thing. When I
But were you around for Just for Laughs last summer?
Yeah.
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 There's the problem.
Yeah.
Go back.
Yeah.
We also do a series of Just for Laughs shows.
See, this is the thing.
You do it, and I'm...
Recorded mercifully during the day, so Walter wasn't wasted.
Yeah.
So Walter was kind of sober.
I mean, you're lucky that you were sober during the day. And this is the thing. When I come to Montreal, I find it's a bit like when for me, it's been like being back at college. At college, even in a bar full of reprobates, all fucked off their faces, I was always the worst. And
really?
As a result, there was this thing where for 3 years of college, every time on the rare occasion I went into class, people came up to me going, "Well, James, welcome me like an old friend," and I had
and
no
nothing,
fucking
yeah.
idea who they were. And for Montreal, it's kind of the same thing. Like, I do have lots of good friends here and people that I do remember because I see them. I wake up in their houses. That's
right,
how I
there
do,
you go.
For that for
do.
That hour in the morning that I'm sober. They, but yeah, there's a lot of people I will bump into. Actually, already today, but over the next couple of days, I will bump into who, like yourself, I'm sure we've met.
Absolutely,
chances
yeah.
are it was 4 in the morning. We were ruined. That's
that sounds
we,
about right.
Were you there at the magical night of Just for Laughs where drinks were free for media?
Yes, I was
that's
there.
We were definitely there for it.
Oh, yeah.
Walter was at his most memorable.
Yeah.
I was at the theater, the St. Catherine.
Yeah.
When it was the thing started at 4 in the morning. I was at that one.
Yeah, it was the after party. That was
I don't
after
think I made
thing.
It to that.
It was the after
we
party.
We did go
no,
to
that
the
was
after after.
We did?
Yeah, we did. It was absolutely like 6 a.m.
Yeah.
We didn't stick around long, but we were there.
I was upstairs on the roof when dawn broke.
Yeah,
I think that was the sun started to like break the line, and I was like, "This is go home time. Like, this is now officially tomorrow. It stopped being tonight a while ago."
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, my show. I'm not actually purporting to claim to be living the dream. My show is actually about trying to make other people see that they're living the dream.
Okay.
But for me, right now, I am living the dream because 2 years ago I first came to Mainline and I saw when it was during Just for Laughs when Setlist was on here.
Right.
And I met Amy and I met all the awesome people that work here. And I was like, this is the coolest fucking venue I've ever seen. And they were saying, well, you should apply to the Fringe. And quite literally, I think what I like about the circle of people I know in Montreal is that they're the only people I know, and I include myself in this, who make a plan at 5 in the morning and fucking well
it happens
through.
Yeah,
you do it right. Yeah. I've never
unless
been
you
one
can't
of these,
remember but yeah
I've never been one of these like, hey, we're gonna do this, let's
no
let's,
you
let's
you stick
do.
You stick to your drunken
yeah exactly
plans.
If
yeah.
someone if I say I'm gonna do something, doesn't matter how hammered I am, it's gonna I'm gonna do it.
So and that so that being said, this is in fact your first Fringe show here.
Exactly. This is my first time. It's really my first time performing a full-length show in Montreal. Yeah, ever.
And is it like a comedy hour? Like you'd sort of take the
it's
hour
a comedy hour, exactly.
Okay.
So I toured the UK with it. It's my fourth hour that I've done.
Okay.
So each year in the UK, I would tour a different show. They all had different themes. This was the first one that I did that I wanted to be particularly upbeat and positive. And by that, I mean earlier shows that I've done. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's got some dark elements. But previous ones have been about kind of being bullied and about that kind of thing. So this was the first one I said, even though there's these dark elements, which are all the audience being invited to laugh at me and my misery, the aim was for them to leave with a spring in their step.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got an upbeat ending, but essentially the main aim was for them to leave and go, thank fuck I'm not James Mullinger. And,
well, because I think that's a bit of a rarity in modern comedy to have upbeat comedy.
Right.
Right? It's like most of what you said is like, you're like, oh, I'm laughing at him because shit is terrible and whatever, and then just sort of like, but to put a positive spin on
but
it.
But that was exactly what I thought, and I thought it was a tricky thing to do given the subject matter of a lot of it is dark and filthy. And also there's the element that one thing I don't particularly like in comedy or in life is I don't like comedy that bullies people. I mean, I don't mind, by that I don't mean intelligent comedy that's satirizing certain things and questioning things.
Okay.
But I've never been the comedian that wants to do or indeed likes people coming up and doing jokes about fat people or about any different group of people.
Right.
And for me, I think the reason, like, for example, some of the content would be considered an adult show. But the reason I often get away with having not only kind of 14-year-olds in the room, but also in some cases like 80-year-olds, is that my emphasis is on the target is me. At no point are you ever... At no point am I picking on someone else than myself. I am laying bare every shitty, dirty, disgusting thing I've ever done for your delectation. Laugh at me, not anyone else. So that's why I always hope that audience members are happy to sit in the front row. They know they're not going to get picked on because I'm the one being picked on.
So you just paint the target on yourself.
Exactly.
So, unrelated to your show, but I'm just curious. Why do you love Montreal? If you're like not from here, but you seem to have a you gushed a little bit at the beginning, be like, oh, I love this Montreal. Why is it like? I were to be considering to move to London, would you be like, don't do it, idiot? You live in Montreal.
I would absolutely, and I actually recently left London.
Chris Betts
and moved.
Do you know Chris Betts?
Sorry,
do you know Chris Betts?
No.
Chris Betts.
That question was coming later.
Betts is a comedian who like. This is putting words in his mouth, but felt that things were going too well for him in Montreal, so he wanted to go to London where it would be a struggle.
Right. Interesting.
He's got a beard. He's got a shaved head.
A smart move. A lot of people like to do that. I mean, and don't get me wrong. As a sideline, I did actually recently leave London. I've lived there my entire life, 36 years. And I
ask him where he moved to. I know the answer.
Yes, I moved.
Ask him where.
Where did you move to?
St. John, New Brunswick.
Right.
I've been there.
Yeah. Right.
I lived there for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Really?
Like not lived there, but I was like traveling for work and had to stay a month.
My car broke down.
More than a visit.
Yeah.
More than a like pop in for the weekend. I was there for like a full month.
Well, James is living there.
Yeah.
Why?
And so I moved there. Well, because A, it's beautiful. I'm in a place called Rosse, which is just outside, which is just stunning. I've got a lot of Canadian friends who are comics who left Canada and moved to London to work.
Right.
One thing that I've never... I treat my whole year like a fringe festival. So there's one thing I hate, and I'm not disparaging comics that say this or do this, and I'm not dissing any of these comics that said this, but all my Canadian friend comics who were both from here, but mainly from Toronto, would all say the same thing, like, Canadian comedy market's dead, the club scene's dead, blah, blah, blah. So we had to come to London to make our fortune or at least get by. London obviously does have a shitload of comedy clubs. It obviously does have a lot of things going on, but the competition obviously is massive.
Yeah.
But also, it ain't all that great. And I would argue that the thing is that would be true. What they say is true. If you're the kind of guy that sits there and goes, just phones his agent once a week and goes, "What have you got me? What have you got me?"
Yeah, yeah.
I've never been that guy. I've never relied on an agent. Never relied on on anyone else. I do
would
it all
love
myself.
To rely on an agent.
So, so I literally just do everything myself. I book venues myself. I promote myself. I do it all, and it's word of mouth. So when I tour the UK, I'm going back. And again, it's not like I can never go back to England. I just don't have to live there. I get to live in a beautiful place with my family, travel to England, do a tour there, enjoy all the things that, that are to be enjoyed without paying the ridiculously high living costs and, you know, all the other bullshit that goes with it.
I got to say, because we were talking about this the other day, and I just, practicality question, are you getting killed like in airfare costs here?
I mean, I would argue...
You have, like, frequent flyer miles?
I would argue that Air Canada is a terrorist organization out to destroy Canada. That,
feel like
that is indisputable. Like, and
that doesn't seem slanderous at all.
No, it cannot be just the comedy industry that is completely fucking annihilated by Air Canada's disgustingly high... I mean, so
there's no way to get around it.
So, yeah, but there's no way to get around it. Well, there is, weirdly, the way to get around it, the cheaper way, is to go via fucking London, England. So this is how insane it is.
How do you mean?
Okay, I was booked to do some shows in Edmonton, you know, in Canada,
sure.
Right?
That
okay.
Edmonton.
Sorry?
That Edmonton.
That Edmonton,
yeah,
right?
Not
right.
The other one.
Not
right.
The other one.
Not
well,
Edmonton.
There was one in London. Right.
Now we know.
So, Edmonton, Alberta, right?
Right.
So, it's the airfare to fly to Edmonton
from
St.
John,
New Brunswick, $1,000,
Jesus.
Right? Return. To go from St. John, New Brunswick to London, do five days of shows in London, then fly from London to Edmonton, then do 7 days of shows, then fly Edmonton to St. John, same price.
What?
Air Canada... fucking hate Canadians. That's all I'm saying. Right?
Yeah, well, let's go to London and Edmonton.
Right,
that's
right, right,
right. I'm down, man. Well, I was like, I might have the show in Windsor.
And
let's go to London.
And
first.
While this may seem like, and I don't want to, you know, but to me, there is no good reason to not live. I mean, Canada is my favorite place in the world. Everything since I've been here 4 months, not a single day have I once woken up and missed a single thing about London. And yet every day I lived in London, I thought, why the fuck am I living here? And the only thing that I can honestly say after 4 months of living here is, and you rightly asked the question, am I getting killed in airfare costs? Well, not really, because obviously I budget for it and all the rest
right,
of it.
Right.
And I don't take a gig that's not going to pay enough
right,
to cover
yeah,
it.
Right.
But yes, it does limit what you do, and it does mean that you turn a lot of stuff down within Canada because you can't afford... Whereas I know what it costs from here to London. That's what it is. If someone booked... And people in London know where I am. If they book me for it, they know that that's factored
part of the
in.
Cost, yeah.
St. John have a club?
Sorry,
is there a club in St. John?
There is one, but I'm setting up stuff. I'm doing like solo theatre shows there.
Right.
But yeah, there's not a purpose built club. There's lots of, you know, again,
right.
Like fringe venues. Like
right,
people,
right.
People putting
right.
on nights.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah, there's places.
Yeah,
I remember,
I'm sure there's
in,
places.
When I was in St. John, Picnic Face played it somewhere in Verdun.
And I'll tell you what,
Verdun, St. John.
And I'll tell you what
the
about
Verdun
a club in St. John. Every time, you know, there's at least something going on there every week,
yeah.
Or at least or a few around the surrounding area, and they're always absolutely heaving. In London, you might have 30 clubs running every single night. Half of them get pulled.
Yeah.
Right,
that's,
because
yeah.
no one shows up.
Yeah,
that's
and,
like even.
And then you've got some of the best comedians in the world there turning up to work, and they're being turned away and told they're not getting paid because no punters have shown up.
Yeah.
That's why I left.
Are you doing stand-up and stuff while you're here in Montreal? Are you like, trying to get on shows? Or?
Well, I'm...
Oh,
I'm
no, I know you're going
I'm
to
at
do
the
best. Yeah.
So in between these, yeah, so like tomorrow night... In fact, so Saturday night I do my show here at the Main Line, and then I'm doing two shows at the Nest on Saturday night, and then next week Comedy Works Nest. Yeah, so...
So you're going to be busy then?
Packing a lot in. And that's how I roll. I just like to pack in as much as possible. But equally, my days, as I say, I don't... Because I do all the promotion myself, I'll be out there flying, I'll be out doing things like this. You know, I put it all down to word of mouth, and when I first started touring a few years ago, when I was kind of getting sick of the club scene, I would go to towns, find towns that were slightly outside, so you'd have a big city and then have a little town next to it. I would go to the little one next to it and find a theatre there, find like 150-seater, book that, put on a show, promote it myself, and then each year it became easier and easier. So now... I'm at a stage that I'm doing exactly that in October, November, 4 weeks going around the UK, and I basically don't have to do very much because the word of mouth has spread that, you know, I just put it on now and enough people that have been to previous ones and enjoyed them. And think of the money that I've saved over the years by not paying out to all of the different aspects.
Yeah, exactly. Just show up, do your promos, and put people in the seats.
Yeah. And that's not to say it hasn't been hard work.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, you know, I prefer to think of myself, because I always have a theory that no one wants a venue full more than the poor fucker that's got to get on that stage that night.
Absolutely.
Because really, if you know what you're doing, and you know that you're basically, you've spent enough years mastering the craft, or whatever you want to call it, you know that if you've got a packed room, it's a touch wood, it's tough to have a terrible gig. Whereas if 10 people are sat in a 100-seater or 100 people,
you get like one loud laugher can carry the room even. So it's like a joke that like might not play to 10 people, could play to 100.
Exactly. So
what part of England are you from originally?
Maidenhead, which is about half an hour from London.
Right. Yeah. And you know Danny Payne, right?
Yeah, very well. You guys,
friend of the show, Danny Payne.
Friend of the show. He's a good friend. We partied very hard.
See, I wouldn't try to mimic your accent, because I feel that would be insulting. Mm. Danny, on the other hand,
Walter mimics Danny.
I rejoice in mimicking.
Yeah, that asks to be mimicked.
Yeah. So is that? Do you know where Danny's from?
He's from Brighton, but I don't know if he grew up there, but. I know it's from Brighton.
Brighton accent.
I mean the weird thing with England is that there are so many different accents. Like here, you wouldn't have a different accent for every half an hour, because England's so small.
Yeah.
There's this. I mean, there's another reason why I wanted to leave, is there's also the issue. There's also this kind of insane class system in place, whereby people, based on how you speak, which, you know, there's obviously elements of a class system anywhere, but Canada has nothing. Like
you can't ID them as quick.
You can't ID them. Yeah. Basically, if someone went in for a job interview, the employer in England would be able to tell from that person's voice,
roughly where they came from and their economic class.
Yes, exactly that. Like a bracket for what their parents are.
Really?
My mom is from Penzance. Right. My cousins have Cornish accents.
Right.
And they say that like they don't go to London because they'll basically get shit on for being Cornish.
Yeah.
That's shitty. You're like living near one of the best cities in the world, but because you've got an accent that's from the same country, people will be like, oh, you're fucking Cornish.
You're backward. Yeah, there's basically, it's weird. For a country that is very inclusive in many ways, it's incredibly racist to its own. It's like, if you're from Liverpool, you're a thief. If you're from here, you're this. If you're from this area, you're unintelligent. Like, it's all of these terrible offensive stereotypes. But as I say, the class thing is the worst one, whereby people will literally just make a decision. I mean, you know, and it works both ways. You know, you've got companies that will have someone come in and go, oh no, they couldn't possibly work here. Clearly, their parents are frightfully working class. We can't have them here. But then the flip side
switch up the accent a little bit.
And then the flip side to that is you could have people that actually hate the privileged and hate people that went to private school. So someone comes in with a posh voice and says, hello, I'm Wilkins from Cheshire. You could have the employer thinking, we don't need some posh prick in here, and he doesn't get the job for that reason. So there's just this...
His problem is his name was Wilkins.
Exactly, Wilkins.
No matter what accent you put on a name like Wilkins, you're in
trouble.
You know
what I mount all of this to?
Right.
Too many white people.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just I think it really feels like white people just looking for an excuse to be exclusionary.
White people found a way to be racist against white people.
They're like, white people are like, so we can't be racist about other races now. Right, okay. Well, let's turn on themselves.
I mean, there's plenty of minorities in London, right? I don't see how... Anyway, that's just...
So...
Let's try to talk simultaneously here. Let's all just shout very loud.
I never answered your question. Why do I love Montreal?
Right.
I love it. I will start with a kind of a backtrack, which is to say that, granted, most of the times here, I have been here at the most fun time of the year. But the fact remains, and I think February exactly. Right. And I think I said this to you though already, that does stand for something, because in a place like London, if something fun is put on there, the English or the powers that be find a way of fucking it up. You could not have the Just for Laughs festival in London. It wouldn't work. The crowd system wouldn't work. The public transport wouldn't work. Nothing about it would work. So the one thing I would say is that, because someone has said to me, when I've said Montreal's my favourite city, they're like, yeah, best because you're there in July, and of course it's amazing then. And I'm like, yeah, but the fact that Montreal copes with it and Montreal embraces it and is able to facilitate that fun, that makes it an awesome city.
Because we know what's on the line.
Exactly.
If we don't get this done in 3 months, it's going to be snowy and shitty.
Right.
So it's like, get it done.
I'm going to guess you don't drive here.
I flew here, but
when you're in the city, do you drive?
Oh no, no.
That I'm sure is helping your cause.
No. If he's driven in London, he's fine.
When I learned to drive, I was having my driving lessons around Piccadilly Circus, right. Which is quite an odd thing when you actually come here.
Not a circus.
Not a circus.
Well, it is, but it is.
But it's scary getting. Well, it's weird when I get into a car in St. John, and type into the GPS, you know, Prince Edward Island, and. It's just a weird concept for me that the time that it says I will get there is the time I will be there.
Yeah.
Whereas in London, you add 2 hours. And of course, really, in London, I've never driven faster than, you know... I mean, it's an odd thing having driving lessons in central London, because basically you get to, in the space of a two-hour lesson, you get to go around a block. That's it. You just sat in traffic, you just get to learn touch control. But no, I haven't driven in Montreal.
Terrible. The traffic is terrible. The construction is the worst.
Right, yeah. I feel that's helping your enjoyment of the city, the fact that you're not driving.
Yeah.
We were late today coming in because of the stupid construction.
Do you go to Prince Edward Island a lot?
I went there a few weeks ago for a gig in Charlottetown and had a nice time, enjoyed the gig, was a bit worried about the kind of 4.5 hour drive back if I'd be able to stay awake. But luckily...
4.5 hours from St. John?
From Charlottetown to back to St. John. But luckily, it's actually very easy to stay awake coming from Prince Edward Island to St. John, because you spend the entire journey going, why the fuck did I pay $45 to go over the bridge?
For the bridge, right?
Right?
It's not cheap.
That is not okay.
No.
Like, if you want to abolish a ferry boat, which I'm all for, being in St. John... But
it's been years. Coming up on...
bridge should be cheaper.
They've made their money back.
Absolutely.
$45 to leave a place.
Yeah. They don't charge you going in.
No, there's exactly. Which is what. Because I think actually it's fair to say that a lot of people. Like, if I'd have got to that bridge and they'd have said it's $45 to get out, I'd have phoned the promoter and gone, right, the fee is now that plus $45, right? Otherwise, I'm turning around.
Bridge money.
But instead, I had no idea. Got paid, took the money, suddenly on the way home, and bosh.
Yeah. I feel like if you only have a few days, like if you know you only have a few days left to live, you should spend those days on Prince Edward Island just so you could, you know, screw the metaphor.
You get the $1.
That's true. Yeah. That's exactly what I would do.
The worst part about that bridge is that you can't see over it.
Yeah.
So, because it's like the only cool thing about that bridge would be if you could like look the out views. And be like, holy shit, I'm driving over an ocean.
I agree. There's nothing beautiful.
And you're just like, nope, just concrete walls and bullshit.
I do like Prince Edward Island, though.
So. It is a lovely place.
Yeah.
Just shouldn't have to pay to leave.
Right.
You want to wrap it up, Walter?
Yeah, I guess so. This was so. Did you? What do you want to mention? Do you have like a?
Well, he has fringe shows. His Nest shows. He has work shows.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, I mean, anyone listening that is interested, my website is jamesmullinger.com.
Did we say works?
No, we didn't say.
You said Nest.
Yeah, we had works. I'm doing like that new pro am night, whatever. Tuesday.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, fuck you, Walter. I paid attention.
But yeah, jamesmullinger.com is my website. All of it's on there. I'm doing almost every night for the next week at Mainline Theatre. The show's called Living the Dream, and I think people will like it. Really, that is when we do these interviews and you talk about your shows, really that is what it's boiling down to.
Jimmy Carr says you're a great stand-up.
Jimmy Carr was very nice to me when I was starting out and helped me a lot. Put me on his second ever DVD when I'd only been going for 6 months.
Wow.
Do you ever claim that you're related? Because you could.
Canada, you could get away with it.
Yeah.
No one knows.
Yeah, I might try that.
I'm like, British saying. Checks out.
Yeah.
How were you featured on Comedy Central?
I did a show, which I was filming here last year, called A Moment With, and we would do these 2-3 minute segments with people where we would go in and interview people. It came from a show I did called Movie Kingdom, which was the world's first, in theory, world's first funny film review show, where we would review films in a humorous way, but also interview people at junkets and stuff.
Right.
And red carpets. And we weren't taking the piss out of them, we were trying to make them laugh.
Yeah.
Which is a very difficult thing to explain to a publicist.
Yeah.
Because the way we would explain it is we'd say, well, look, we're not laughing at Daniel Craig, we're laughing with Daniel Craig. And of course, whenever you say the phrase, I'm not laughing with you, I'm laughing at you, it means exactly that, right?
I don't think Daniel Craig has ever laughed with anybody.
No, but that was the thing. We made him crack a smile, which took as a massive success. And then that turned into this thing called A Moment With, where we would basically just sit with people. So last year, that's how fast time flies. Every year coming back here, 2 years ago, we filmed a load of them here where we basically did almost every comedian that was at the festival, and we just did, it's like a half hour interview, and then we got these fun like 2 minute segments trying to make them laugh.
Those still online? Can people still see those? Like, are they archived somewhere?
It is, yeah. In fact, on my website you can click to a best of. So of the 5 hours of television, there's about 2 minutes of good bits.
That sounds pretty enjoyable. I'd check that out.
What's the 2 minute bit? Not all ten.
That sounds like something. I feel like I'd be very good at that. I feel like that's something I could possibly.
That's almost what we do,
basically. except replace amuse with anger.
Yeah, yes. Agitate, yes. Get them mad at us.
Which you mentioned you've done a couple times.
Yeah. I'm angry. Yeah, that's probably a point. One interesting thing I can say about the show is that I do have footage in the show or from the TV series I did of me upsetting a lot of the celebrities. Like, it didn't always work. You know, people like George Clooney were lovely, thought we were funny. Anne Hathaway. I mean, the thing is, like, I've never been the kind of performer that blames the audience. Like, I hate comics that come on. Like, it's that thing when you get to, you arrive at a gig and someone goes, what are they like about the audience? Like, what are they like tonight? And it's like, what do you mean, what are they like? What are you like?
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do to entertain them? It doesn't matter what they're like. What the fuck are you bringing to the table, you prick, right? And I've always been that believer in the... If I die, it's my fault.
Yeah. Like, unless the audience is really shitty, though.
Yeah. I mean, no, I mean, there's obviously exceptions. If there's a bar brawl going on.
No, but I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
But, you know, I take it upon myself. So, like, if I have a bad gig here at the Fringe, it's my fault and it's on me, and I'll be standing there handing out refunds. No, I won't.
Don't say that. We're going to edit that out. Yeah, don't promise refunds.
But immediately redacted.
And, yeah. Similarly, with the celebrities that we were doing on the show. If they didn't laugh, I took it as a personal leer. So that's why when Daniel Craig cracked a smile and said he enjoyed it, I was like, right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll take that.
You're like, when
I upset Cameron Diaz, again, I took it as a failure, because at Cameron Diaz, it's pretty kind of well-reported, unless it's all bullshit, seems to be quite fun. But when I asked her to do a fart in front of me, she didn't find it funny and didn't want to run with it. That I take as my fault. When Anne Hathaway, which you will, if you come into the show, you will see this footage. When Anne Hathaway decided to get extremely pissed off with me, I put it all on her. Anne Hathaway has no sense of humour. That is the one instance where Anne Hathaway is the celebrity equivalent of a bar brawl in a comedy club.
What movie was she promoting?
The Batman, Dark Knight Rises.
Okay, because see, I feel like she should have had a bit of a sense of humour for that, because if she was promoting like Les Mis or something, I would understand. Oh, you're right.
But it's funny how the most serious movies, often you can get the most laughs. I mean, one of my favourite moments was when the film Shame with Michael Fassbender.
Yes.
Steve McQueen.
Right.
Who's a very, you know, he's an artist first. He was an artist before he was a director. Very serious man. And I was told on the way in, by this point we'd gained a level of trust with the publicists, and they all trusted us and knew we weren't going to upset anyone. But on the way in, the film company representative said to me, look, Steve's very serious. This is a, you know, it's a very serious movie about sex addiction. You know, just tread carefully for your own sake.
Right.
And I thought, fair enough. And I went and sat down. And while they were saying, and I have all this footage, and I don't actually think it's in this show, but I did use it in a previous one I did called The Man With No Shame. But if anyone emails me, I'll send them this clip. We sat down, and it was that awkward moment, I don't know if you guys have this, where they're still setting up the cameras, and it's like, well, you can't start, you don't want to, I can't start
make
going.
Make idle chit-chat.
Yeah, I can't go. But the obvious thing for me to do is to go, fucking loved the film. Yeah. But I'm then going to have to do that again on camera, so I can't waste it. And often I've had celebrities say to me, like, hey, stop wasting the gold, like, fucking away. You know, because we don't have to be faking this in a minute, let's do it for real. So essentially you just sat there silent. But and I did this weird thing with Fassbender and McQueen, where I'm like sat there, I'm like, awkward, like this, in the most like sad way. And the camera started, and I just said, Shame is a wonderful, you know, and powerful depiction of sex addiction, and I, you know, commend both of you for this, you know, highly startling and emotional picture. And I would also like to thank you, because it's put me off internet porn for life. Huh? And there was like this brief pause, and they both just howled with laughter. And I was just sat there going, fucking yes. Yeah. This is what I look for.
You gambled a little on that
one. Yeah, exactly. Like, I could fully have expected Steve McQueen, from what I knew of him, to be
stone faced,
a total Anne Hathaway, and fair enough. I mean, hey, it's not the best joke in the world, but I just think it was just one of those things where they were just sick of being serious all day. They're fun guys who produce serious work.
Henceforth, knowing being completely humorless will be called pulling an Anne Hathaway. Anyway, James, thank you for joining us today, and best of luck with the show here.
I guess the best way to see. It's probably the website, because you have your Fringe shows and you have the other comedy shows and all that.
Exactly, stuff. Yeah. It's all on my website, jamesmullinger.com. James, MULLINGER.com.
Perfect. Awesome, thanks for coming out, James.
Thank you guys very much. It's been great.
sweet piano tunes you're listening to right now come courtesy of Leland Beckman and Oral Turpitude. Oh man, that was some great podcasting, wasn't it? Anyhow, be sure as always to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, add us on iTunes, buy our stuff, and basically try as hard as you can to make us happy in every single way possible. Of course, be sure to check back every day on 9to5.cc for comics on Wednesdays, podcasts on Thursdays, Scott or Sophie's art on Fridays, and seriously, we'll try as hard as we can to get Zombies and Loathing, Fuck Mondays, and Templars back as soon as we can. Thanks for listening, everyone.
9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you?